83, yeah. 5 o'clock, hearing room A, Senate Committee on Energy and Environment, Senator John Kitzhaber.
Tonight, we're having a hearing on Senate Bill 237, which is the omnibus land use bill dealing with marginal lands and EFU. This is a pretty long bill. It has been engrossed, and these are available from the committee and from the Bill Distribution Center. Since there's a number of different sections on it, we're going to have hearings on it this week, today, Wednesday, Friday, and next Monday. And we're going to try to break up the topics into categories so that we can kind of focus in and deal with each issue as it comes up. Today, we're trying to focus on the definition of marginal lands and those uses that are permitted in marginal lands. There were a few people, I think one of them is Hazel Veal, who did not get an opportunity to speak last time, and I would like to take her first. And if you could just identify yourself for the record, and then...
I'm Hazel Veal from Albany, Oregon. I'd like to speak to this issue. In the past, when we created the LCDC and the commission and passed the Senate Bill 100, we implemented a system to work with. It was like each city and town in Oregon was to assign a task of coming up with a comprehensive plan for the development of their specific area. In this plan, they were to look at the growth of an area for the next 25 years. When you remove this land that was included in the plans and the federal government establishes a line for their property and the churches and other entities that are exempt from taxes and other restrictions, we're down to the EFU land and timber land and lots of record and, if any, marginal land. Now, marginal land could be described as land that borders onto any of these things that I have mentioned here. And in each one of the areas, and I think this should go back to the local control, in each area that we're in, I think they should take a look at the land that would be called marginal land and what could be used, what it could be used for. In some of the areas, the marginal land wouldn't grow grass. You couldn't get a septic system in it. There would be no way that you could use it for anything in the world other than just hold the earth together. So, you know, the local communities would know that better than anybody else in the whole area. To write a bill like this that would cover everything generally, I think it needs to be handed on down to local control. It's all right to have a bill. And this looks like it's a good cover-up for Senate Bill number 100 that was set forth here a few years ago, whenever they just went across and made just a general cover of the whole state. But we have lots of high land that won't grow timber. We have lots of marginal land that won't grow anything, any food values or anything like that, that we could go into and have small 5-acre tracts or something where people could get out and enjoy the better life of living in a rural atmosphere. And I'd like to see this studied a little bit more and some restrictions put on that, not down to the point that you'd have to have 20 acres or anything in that manner, because lots of people would have to have enough equipment for 20 acres to farm 360 acres. So we ought to look at it from two or three different standpoints rather than just looking at it as I'm going to go out here and zone a little piece of ground here, 5 acres on this corner and 5 acres over here and 20 out here in the middle, or make it so restrictive that a person can't use the land. And in lots of the farms, there's hardly a farm in our part of the country that you wouldn't find 5 or 10 acres, which would be a nice building site that would return revenue to the state and to the county, that's not returning a thing to them at this time.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Okay. Appreciate your testimony. I think that what the intent of the bill, it is, there's no question that it is an extension to some extent of 7100. I can't pretend that it isn't. It does change the land use planning statutes to a certain extent. The idea of the marginal land portion of it is to try to loosen up some of the restrictions of Senate Bill 100. And, of course, there are other provisions in this bill that go the opposite direction in terms of trying to protect our prime agricultural land. But I do appreciate your comments that we are going to try to work out some equitable compromise here. Thank you. Now, is there any other individuals who had signed up last time and were not heard? Yes, what's your name, sir? Okay, so you with the Ag for Oregon Group. Okay, what I'm going to do is we do have a... Yes, and sir, your name?
I signed up for Wayne Buchanan.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, would you like to come up at this time, sir? Just trying to... We're going to get everyone that signed up here today on. I just want to get the folks that didn't get an opportunity last time to speak.
I think I'm Dwayne Duchama, 38279 Hungry Hill Drive, Sile, Oregon. I'm president of the State Farm and Land Institute. I think that when this bill has started out to clarify marginal lands, I think it's something that's needed, and I think that everyone tried to do. It's something that there's a lot of land in the rural area that does not economically produce crops, timber, or field crops, or livestock. But I think as it goes on through this, from what I've been able to read the bill, it starts in right away restricting it. For instance, the way I read it here, it says if there's a piece of land in a 320-acre piece that is 70% 20 acres contiguous. The way it looks to me then, if you have 320 acres and you have a 40-acre piece in the middle, there's no way that the other pieces can comprise 70% contiguous. You broke that up. So you therefore take out all of the 20-acre parcels that could be of marginal land. Now, unless I'm reading it wrong. And then when you go into 50 cubic feet, I have a tree farm, that there is no land that you can't grow 50 cubic feet of some kind of timber on in the Western Oregon, unless it is completely rock and wouldn't stand a septic tank. Or wouldn't is in swamp that wouldn't that you couldn't get a septic tank. I think that when you start talking to foresters, this is much too restrictive on it. Then when you go into the part where you cannot build a house on land until it produces $20,000 of gross, if you get into timberland, this may be 20 years from the time you plant a tree crop, yet you are growing something that eventually has high volume per acre of income. But until you sell that, it isn't like a ryegrass crop or a corn crop that you sell every year. You're planting them, and it's 30 years before you take anything from it. So I think as you go through that, you are restricting it to the point that you're undoing what everyone tried to do when they set this out as marginal land, and make a use of some of these small acreages that are not economically producing, and that they could supply a family with 4-H projects, future farmer projects, and a place to build a home.
Yes, sir.
Is your complaint with the income test generally, or with the fact that you don't take into account eventual income?
Mm. Well, I think to take eventually income. I mean, when you're saying here $20,000 a year, You've got to prove do this before you could build a house. You couldn't build a house for 30 years if you were going out starting a tree farm.
But it's not the idea or the concept of an income test that bothers you.
That's right. It's just the way it is worded, and I don't know how you're going to get around this, but it would seem like that if you were going to have marginal lands, let's state that if it's marginal land, if it's class 4 or worse, or put a realistic wood products on it, and then stop there. I mean, if we go on and continue to put on these restrictions like the bill does, pretty soon you don't have anything that's going to meet this. For one thing or another, you cut it off in this bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Day.
Maybe a better approach would be to, and have you dealt with the land use law fairly?
Yes, I have.
Maybe the approach ought to be that instead of trying to amend the goals, whether it be in farm use or for forestry, you should look at a doable exception process that can, where you can go through your, particularly your county, through some type of finding where a certain land, it could be, I could proceed to soils that might be in class 2 that simply are not going, would be marginal for other economic reasons or for a combination of reasons. And just how would you feel about that?
Well, I think this is a good idea. I think rather that it would be make more sense to go along with this and have an exception of it and have it something that would, you know, that actually would fit.
If we did that, would you be uncomfortable if we did that and this would be outside the urbanization boundary? In other words, outside it'd be where you're actually in resource producing. You're either producing trees or you're producing food and fiber. Mm-hmm. Could you subscribe to the fact that you'd have to zone your land accordingly if you were to have a farm tax deferral, providing a sound and equitable exception process that existed?
On the farm deferral...
Well, what I'm saying to you is that if we had a legitimate exception process,
mm-hmm.
which we don't have right now,
no.
as you know, and that was allowed to work its way, do you believe it'd also be fair for us to take a position that in order to receive farm tax deferral, that you should have your land zoned as a resource, either in timber or food and fiber, EFU or
yes, yes, I
you
think
wouldn't
that,
object to that.
No, I think that if, you know, if you're going to have the farm deferral on it, then it should be a producer farm.
Don't pretend about it.
That's right. That's right.
How would you feel about no subdivisions in outside urban growth boundaries?
That's right.
In the FU and that? None.
Well, when you say none, you mean you're never going to let a subdivision outside the urban growth boundary in the state of Oregon? I mean, I think that I don't think that subdivisions should be scattered out through, but when you say none, I think that there are areas that if you have a large area that is marginal lands...
But there's where the exception process comes in. In other words, you'd have an exception process on that. If you bear in mind that that's how you would address that type of question,
yes.
Would you feel that that would be proper where we have resource land and we're protecting it, you don't allow subdivision in the resource management area?
Yes, I think there's that, you know, there. Are, so there is some exceptions that then go through the, you know, the process. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Thanks, sir. I guess at this point we have a presentation, I think, arranged through Scott Ashton on the soil classification system.
How are you, Steve?
Marshall.
Where are the sections?
Tingey.
What would be prohibited in marginal
land? Okay,
my name is Marcel Tingey. I represent the Soil Conservation Service in Portland. I have with me Bill Forrest, who is our local agent in Linn County, and the two of us shall make this presentation. We are here tonight to offer to you an option to the land capability classification system that currently exists in Senate Bill 100. It's called Land Evaluation and Site Assessment System, and affectionately dubbed LESA. We perceive LISA to be an approach, a system, whereby we can more finitely define the relative values of land for the many uses that it has demands upon. LISA was developed by the Soil Conservation Service as a part of a task force by USDA about 2 years ago and tested in 12 counties and 6 states over this past 2 years. It has now been distributed for use in all of the states in the United States and is in fact being used in many counties. In Oregon, to this point in time, we have introduced it to 3 counties, to Linn County, to Multnomah County, and to Washington County. And all 3 of these counties, with the local planning agents, have gone through the system and made some effort to adopt it into their program. We think that this has some viability for the possible inclusion of this bill or whatever bill may be adopted for handling the problem that appears to exist in Oregon at this time in the land use bill, in that it is too broad and too difficult to identify which lands should appropriately be maintained and preserved for agricultural use and which lands might appropriately be used for other uses. We're here not particularly to take position pro or con on this particular bill, but rather to provide to you an idea of a system that you may wish to consider and may wish to include in this bill. I'm going to show you these slides very quickly, and then I would like to have Bill discuss with you what they have done in Linn County. I would like to say that I handed out to you, or had handed out to you at the beginning, 2 reports. One is a report that was published representing experiences in several states in the Soil and Water Conservation magazine, and the other one is a story that came from Whitman County, Washington, which is one of the counties that was in the 12 trial counties during the past 2 years. And they have expressed their experiences. They have indicated some of the faults they find with it, some of the objections, and some of the advantages. And I think it may be worth your while to review that afterwards. The land evaluation and site assessment system is comprised of 2 parts. The first part is land evaluation, which determines the quality of land for agricultural uses based on soil surveys. This is the one limitation in the state of Oregon, in that we do not have soil surveys in all counties covering all agricultural lands in the state. We are in the process of obtaining soil surveys, but we do not have a complete set for the entire state. I think that I would have to say that that would be one of the limitations. I need to also say to you that this system was designed by the Soil Conservation Service not specifically to resolve situations such as occur in Oregon at this time or in any other state, but to help us to carry out our mission objective, which is a departmental objective of preserving prime, unique, and important agricultural lands. Part 2 is site assessment. This assesses the sites of the areas of land for agricultural viability and considers all factors influencing the site in addition to the soils. In other words, Part 1 is strictly soils, and Part 2 are other factors that would be of consideration by the local governmental organization in a particular county or in the state or in a community. This can be adapted to any of those levels. The objectives of the system are to facilitate protection of farmland by decision makers, including landholders, developers, state and local planners, and governing officials. It is to implement national and state farmland protection policies. The system is developed at the level at which it will be used.
In other words, it could be used at a state level, but probably more easily used at a local county level or community level on a site-by-site basis. A local work group is organized to facilitate the development of the system. And the system is a tool to aid these decision makers, but it does not take away the power of local officials to make land use decisions. It is simply a tool in your hands in making decisions. Agricultural land evaluation is defined as the process of rating soils of a given area and placing them into groups ranging from the best suited to the poorest suited for agricultural purposes. In other words, each soil is viewed and appraised on the basis of its relative value to another soil in that particular locality as to the desirability of maintaining it in contrast to the other soil for agricultural uses. The evaluation takes into consideration four different sets of criteria: soil potential, soil productivity, land capability classification, and important farmland classification. And I indicated to you we are vitally concerned in prime agricultural land and unique agricultural land and those lands that are important to a state. This is an example. On the left-hand column you see 5 different soils, and they are arrayed across indicating the capability classification in column 4, the important farmland classification in column 5, the relative potential value in column 7. And then on the far right-hand column is the group or the rating that was given to those soils. And the Kempsville soil, for instance, is rated number 1 in contrast to Keyport down on the bottom, which is rated number 5, or group number 5. That which has the rating 1 would be of most important for maintaining and agricultural uses. That has a 5 would be least important. And this can be done by an individual on an individual soil basis or by groups of soils. And then after this is done, they're arrayed so that all of the soils have a relative value, all of the soils having a value of 100 points, for instance, amount in this particular county to 52,644 acres. In other words, this gives you an idea of what you actually have in your particular locality of each grouping of soils and what the potentials are for maintaining agricultural uses, or what the potentials are for those least viable for agricultural uses for development to other uses. And then after this is done, and this particular one is Whitman County, Washington, after this is done, a relative value among the grouping is developed so that one can be arrayed in contrast to another. The second part of it is this agricultural site viability assessment. This is, the first part is done primarily by technicians from the Soil Conservation Service using the soil survey that was generated. County agents oftentimes are brought into it, as well as local planners, to get their ideas and to get their consideration relative to the potential use of the soil. This particular part, part two, agricultural site and viability assessment, is totally done by local people. Generally, it is done by a committee comprised of the local planning entity, as well as county agents, soil conservation service people, special interest groups, developers, and whatever, whomever might have interest relative to the needs of that particular locality. The percent of the area in agriculture is one of the criteria and one of the factors that is considered. As you can see, this has a large percentage of the area in agricultural use. A very small percentage of the area is in housing or other uses, developed uses. In this case, the amount of agricultural land in contrast to that developed area is much less. And so this may be a factor that one would consider in maintaining land and agricultural uses or allowing it to go into development. The adjacent land use is another one of the criteria. And as you can see, the adjacent land use for this parcel of farmland is on essentially three sides, enclosed by developed housing units and urbanization. This would not be one that you would probably want to maintain, even though it had a prime ag land category, classification, because of the chances for it to be able to succeed with all of the other uses surrounding it. The size of the site, supposing a developer came in with a unit of 200 acres or 10 acres, that would make a difference. And as you can see here, the size of the site in agricultural use in contrast to that of the developed use may be near equal. That certainly has to be considered when values are placed on these particular characteristics. The agricultural infrastructure should be a consideration. In this case, agriculture has its markets developed. It has storage facilities in many instances. It has equipment dealerships. And so because of the infrastructure that exists that supports the agricultural industry, we would suggest that that should be a consideration when you allow development to come in such an area as this. Land use regulations certainly have to be a consideration. And of course, we have statewide planning goals in Oregon that establish some criteria, and this needs to be fitted into the LISA system. Availability of non-agricultural land. In this instance, this is some agricultural land that has very limited uses, and these kinds of uses may be more readily adapted to development, and these areas would most likely be appropriately allowed to revert to development or other uses rather than trying to maintain them in agricultural use, even though it may have a capability classification of six. Need for additional urban land. Certainly every community has certain needs, and if the needs are great and there's great amount of pressure and there's agricultural land close by, it would not seem appropriate to try and maintain that for agricultural uses in these kinds of situations. And so the value given to this particular factor or characteristic would be much less than it would be in a contrasting situation. Distance to the city is a factor. In this case, you can see that you are out in a broad agricultural area. But if you are closer to a city, it may be that this land should appropriately be considered as ultimately being turned into development rather than maintaining it for agricultural uses. Municipal water distribution system. In this case, there is a municipal water system developed. And if these systems are developed, there is probably not a great deal of chance of fighting the system in trying to maintain the land and agriculture uses if this has already been developed. And so these need to be considered both from the standpoint of allowing such a development of urban water systems as well as making decisions as to where they should be located. Municipal sanitary sewage systems fall in the same category. Investments to support the urban development. All of these kinds of developments are investments to the urban community, and it would seem appropriate where these kinds of investments have been made that those lands which have lower values, agricultural values, should be allowed to go into development, whereas those lands that have high value and do not have investments associated nearby should be maintained for agricultural uses. Transportation certainly is a characteristic that needs to be considered and a value placed on that. If this is the kind of situation that exists, then the preservation of that land for agricultural uses may be much more difficult than if this is the kind of situation that exists. And if this exists and it's going to require the development of power lines, water systems, road systems, schools and bus systems, then certainly we would think that this ought to have a higher value placed on it when maintaining it in agricultural uses. the agricultural site assessment system for a proposed land use conversion then takes each one of these factors and places some criteria and gives value points. For instance, if the site of the size of the site or farm is 100 acres or more, then generally we would think that maybe 10 points ought to be allowed. If the size of the site is only 10 acres, then certainly many fewer points would be allowed. And then on the basis of this, each one could be rated one against another, and each factor against another relative to its viability for maintaining. And each one of these, each one of the factors that I have suggested up there would be given ratings of that kind and criteria that lies within each of those factors as to how you could determine its desirability would be given factors. The system then, after all of these values have been placed on it, and each one of those factors would get one, and may I say that those factors are not established as I've shown them to you on the screen. These can be decided and determined by the local group that's working this system up. These are simply only suggested elements or criteria that ought to be.